welcome to Sobremesa with me, your host, Alan Maguire. Today I have with me Tom Wardle, who is currently a PhD candidate. He's doing his PhD into the historical memory in Spain. And we are going to be extending and continuing our discussion around the historical memory law that we discussed in our interview a couple of weeks ago. Welcome to Sobremesa again, Tom.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and I hope you're doing all right in Madrid with everything that's going on with the coronavirus there.
Yeah, it's a bit worrying. I think at the moment a third of cases are linked to from Madrid, and everyone's just been leaving as well before they put the lockdown on us. Thankfully, I'm not in one of the 37 sites that have been told to quarantine. Not far from it, so. Bit worrying, really. This week, Carmen Calvo passed. Well, she presented the draft bill for the historical memory. Oh, it's changed. They've changed the name now, haven't they?
Yeah, it's now democratic memory. They deemed that historical memory didn't really mean an awful lot. Uh-huh. So they're reframing it as democratic memory. I think it's something that's a bit harder to argue with as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's definitely true. There's been a lot of controversy around that, hasn't there? Like, talking about history, I mean, you talk about democratic memory, it does make it a lot more understandable, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose if you're, in theory, if you're opposed to democratic memory, you're opposed to democracy. And as you say, it's been quite controversial. I've had a few issues with people on Twitter recently talking about it. I think the kind of controversy or the accusation leveled at this new democratic memory law is that it's divisive, that it's stirring up the past, it's reopening old wounds unnecessarily. I think from my perception is that it's just bringing Spain into line with some really kind of rudimentary, basic human rights, transitional justice norms. And that the things that people are saying are controversial about it. The primary controversy, I suppose, is the notion that history is being rewritten in favor of Stalin, according to Vox.
Right.
And one of the aspects of the law is to incorporate democratic memory into the school curriculum. And I suppose the fear is that it will be a very partisan writing of history. But at the moment, there have been a couple of theses written on this, actually. At the moment, Spanish history textbooks are very, they lack a lot of detail on Spanish Civil War and Francoism. I think there was one published about 5 years ago, a history textbook for secondary school students. And it says that Lorca, who we discussed in the last podcast, Lorca died in the Civil War. It doesn't mention that he was killed or mention any of his beliefs. It sort of passes this uncritical view on the Spanish past, which exonerates any guilt or implication.
I think it's important to remember as well that education's always been political. I've got a book from, I think it's probably from 1937 or 1938, and it's an original school history book. And in the first two pages is a picture of Primo de Rivera and a picture of Franco sat on a horse. And, you know, this is a natural sciences book. So it's always been, so they can hardly say that we're messing with their, you know, they're messing with their children's education when, I mean, it's always been a controversial subject, hasn't it? Education. I mean, as well with Catalonia as well. That's another
huge. Yeah, and it is, I suppose it is the primary way of dealing with the past is education. But I think, I don't know what these textbooks would look like, but I imagine that they would be pretty condemning of both sides. It would probably acknowledge that both sides of the Spanish Civil War committed atrocities.
Yeah. It would have to be, wouldn't it, really?
Mm.
I think my concern would be how it's taught in different schools, because, you know, Catholic schools, concertados, and public schools, I suppose that there would, or even in different comunidades as well, because, I mean, education isn't a centralized issue either. It's a comunidad responsibility. So it would be, I think the law, I don't know, I haven't read the part that covers education, but I'd imagine it have to be quite strong guidelines around how it's taught and what's taught and things.
Yeah, at the moment, my understanding is that that the Spanish Civil War and Franco's dictatorship it is part of the syllabus at the moment, but it's about one lesson's worth.
Yeah.
You consider it's the kind of, it defines recent modern Spanish history.
Yeah.
And so if schools want to teach it, it's up to the teacher to teach it as an extra subject.
Yeah. I suppose as well kids think about things differently and it's still, you know, you wouldn't ask somebody what side did your family fight on, or, you know, that's the sort of thing that they tell all us giddies to not talk about when we first come to Spain, with good reason, really. But also, you know, you have to give kids a bit and, you know, they have to learn the past somehow. I've got friends that are teachers, Spanish friends that are teachers, and they always sort of say to me whenever it's mentioned that in the past it wasn't taught because it was seen as, like, too recent a history. Like, it was seen as part of modern history, so we don't teach that, we teach other history. And nowadays, like, even younger teachers, friends I've spoken to have said to me, like, yeah, we teach it, but to be honest, we teach more about the Visigoths and you know, Muslim Spain, the Reconquistador.
Yeah, and I think that One of the constant comparisons that's made is to how Germany has approached the topic of Nazism.
Yeah.
And again, my understanding is that it took them about 20, 25 years to be able to teach that in schools. And it is painful. I do understand the controversy. It would be painful for me to perhaps think that one of my grandparents had been a Nazi or a fascist.
Yeah.
But really, I do think this law is really focused on victims' rights.
Mm.
They've listened to the memory associations who are focused on victims' rights and family rights. Uh-huh. There are memory associations who describe themselves as the Popular Front of Memory,
right,
linked to the Communist Party, who do want to disturb the political order in Spain and form a new republic. But I think in the PSOE has definitely been listening to the apolitical associations a lot more.
Yeah. And have they been talking to them about, because another thing that's quite, I think, big in it is like the persecutions during Franco's time, or the prosecutions and persecutions in Franco's time, but also the titles that were given out, you know, marqueses and, you know, all this sort of thing that were given out. I mean, that's quite a big thing, isn't it? Is that?
Yeah. So a big part of memory activism and the recovery of historical memory in Spain is what's called the Querella Argentina, which is the universal jurisdiction case against the crimes of Francoism in a court in Buenos Aires. And they are trying to prosecute predominantly people who are still alive. There was the Martin Villa gave his testimony week before last, and he served as a minister under Franco, and then he was Minister of the Interior during the transition to democracy, which saw a number of political deaths. So he was questioned about that. So, but the big problem in Spain is the 1977 amnesty law, which was part of the transition to democracy. And it says that crimes before that date basically cannot be prosecuted.
Yeah.
And so the criticism from memory activists is that, and these are predominantly older memory activists who were imprisoned in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
That you freed us with the amnesty law, you let us out of prison, but you also freed our torturers.
Yeah.
So you mentioned about nobilities and honours. The famous example was Billy El Nino, who was a policeman under Francoism, and he tortured multiple people.
Yeah.
He just died in earlier this year of coronavirus.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people really lamenting the fact that he wasn't prosecuted before he died.
Yeah.
He died getting an extra pension for a service in the police.
Yeah.
And having not faced a judge for what are prescribed as human rights abuses.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned earlier that it's like bringing Spain into line with other countries for basic human rights sort of things. And I think the film that talks about Bill and Nino quite a lot, it's on Netflix, The Silence of the Others.
Yeah.
I think like watching that really makes you appreciate, because it wasn't just like Spain come up with the Pact of Silence, you know, the amnesty law, didn't it? And then lots of other countries took it on and, you know, they sort of tried to pass this Pact of Forgetting. But in the film, they show you that quickly these countries all over the world really realize that actually forgetting our past is a difficult thing. And, you know, these things do need to be brought to in front of a judge effectively. And it's like the country that invented it, or one of the main first countries to use it, it's like the last country to go back on it by the looks of it.
Well, this is the thing, is that Spain's transition to democracy, for years it was held up as an example of a bloodless, peaceful transition away from a dictatorship to democracy. And then recently, people have been questioning this narrative about how peaceful it was. There were political deaths. As we said before on the podcast, there was an imposition of a king, arguably, depending how you look at it. But at the same time, 90-something percent of the people at the time voted in favour of in favor of the Constitution. And yeah. I think part of the reason that historical memory or democratic memory is so controversial, well, you know, is deemed controversial by certain people, is that it questions this narrative about the past and how successful the transition was, because people in Spain still take a lot of pride in the spirit of the transition, about how they put their differences aside to come together to create a new democratic Spain. So that's the story. And I think part of the reason it is deemed controversial is because you're questioning this national myth, and it's uncomfortable.
It's a bit similar to when people have called like Winston Churchill a white supremacist.
Yeah, exactly. That's the example I was just about to give.
But it is no, definitely. It's somewhat, it's seen as like a national, it's like a stepping stone as well. I think it's also like more prominent as well because it is a European country. You know, if this was a country in, you know, South America or Africa, you know, lots that have transitioned to democracy. They've also had memories of forgetting, and they've also got, you know, horrendous pasts and things with genocides and Holocausts and things like that. But I think it's a lot more controversial as well, mainly because it's a, you know, it's a member of the European Union. It's, and I think, and I was talking about this in another interview with someone about Spanish identity, Sandy Olguin, and she was saying, you know, part of the modern Spanish identity is that we are a modern European Spanish country, and like comparing it to Germany, how Germany dealt with the Second World War, it's like I don't think they want to take that step back. But as you pointed out, like, it took Germany over 25 years, and it's still a controversial thing in Germany today, isn't it? Really.
Well, it is controversial, but this is one of the stipulations of law is to outlaw the Francisco Franco Foundation and to make apologism for Francoism or fascism, to outlaw that. And this is deemed to be controversial. This is something that personally I really don't understand. I've seen so many photos of people doing fascist salutes brazenly in the streets of Spain. And it's somehow still tolerated, and I don't understand why it would be divisive for that to no longer be accepted. I don't see why that would be divisive for that to be no longer tolerated but to be criminalized.
Yeah, I mean, it's places like Casa Pepe just outside of, well, I won't say where, as I don't want to give any, but, you know, there's a bar in Spain that you can go and buy Franco memorabilia at. And there's, like, all the pictures on the walls and the hats and things. And I went there just to, out of curiosity. It was horrible, horrible place. I was actually in there when Spain got kicked out the last World Cup by Russia, which was quite funny. But there's people taking their kids there, you know, and it's quite worrying, really.
Yeah.
That this culture around this sort of time that was quite bad has been able to sort of flourish is really worrying. Do you think they'll prosecute people for it, though? Do you think that if this law comes into action, I mean, having the law is one thing, but actually prosecuting people in the modern day is another. Do you think that?
I don't think that there are many people still alive to be prosecuted.
Right.
Someone like Martin Villa, it's possible. It will probably take years to deliver a verdict, so I don't know. I would say that it's not so much about prosecution, but with the tomb of Franco and the Valley of the Fallen,
yeah,
example, there are still other key Francoist generals. There's Capo di Anno in Seville,
uh-huh,
who's still buried in the city's basilica.
Yeah.
And I think that the priority of, well, one of the priorities of the law will be to change those graves, to bury them privately.
Yeah.
I don't think that actually prosecutions are a big part of this law. It's right. It's more about recognition.
Uh-huh. It's quite a wide-reaching law, isn't it? Like, it covers a lot of areas.
Yeah, I think it's got about 20 articles to it.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the interesting things, actually, just jumping backwards a bit, is seeing how different press outlets, different English-speaking journalists are reporting on this new law. Okay. Some are running with the topic of the Valley of the Fallen.
Uh-huh.
Others are saying it's stirring up the past. Others are framing it as human rights abuses, prosecutions, and others are focusing on exhumations.
The Valley of the Fallen is quite is probably, I think, the biggest, like, maybe anesthetically, or, you know, it's the biggest change, I think, to the in part of the law, that as well as education, obviously, which we've already spoke about. But so what does it suggest for the Valley of the Fallen? I mean, this has been a sign of speculation. Like you said, last time I interviewed you, you know, there's some people that want it basically burnt to the ground, and there's some people that would probably, you know, rebury Franco there if they had the chance. So it's like a wide spectrum of guesses at once. But what have they stated in the law that's going to happen?
So the Valley of the Fallen, I think, well, the first challenge that the government will have is to get rid of the Benedictine monks.
Yeah.
Who are resident there. They're still resisting, even though the Pope, Pope Francis, has shown his support for removing them from the site desacrify the site.
I don't know the word.
And I think that the general agreement is that there will be some sort of way of adding context to the site to explain why it was built, to explain that it was built as a lasting memorial to the Francoists' victory in the Civil War over the Reds, the Communists.
Yeah.
And to explain that it was built with slave labor. So I don't know whether that will be in it with a museum.
Uh-huh.
As we spoke about previously, some people want to blow up the cross. Others want to tear it down. Others say it should be left in situ. But I think probably the thorniest issue is that in the 1950s and 60s, the Francoist regime, they recovered the bodies of Francoist and Republican soldiers, and they buried them inside this monument.
Yeah.
You know, for the Republicans particularly, often without their family's permission.
Uh-huh.
So there's still a lot of people interred in there, but it's got problems with water damage and things like that, so it's going to be really hard to identify the bones.
Uh-huh.
And Republican families are trying to get to recover these bones.
Mm.
And the problem now is that it's in such a bad condition that that's going to be really hard. But so it's unclear. It could also, the other marked grave there was Primo de Rivera.
Uh-huh.
He could also be moved.
Prima de Rivera, his death is quite controversial, isn't it? Because he was killed. Well, it said that he was killed during the Civil War because he was a prisoner of the Republic. He was the leader of the fascist contingent of Franco's like coalition. Well, at the time, wasn't he? Well, he was leader of the fascist party.
Yeah, he was. And again, it's sort of a historiographical bone of contention about whether he was a victim of the Civil War or whether he was imprisoned before and executed legally. So, it's a bit up in the air, but I think that the government would like to remove his body from the Valley of Fallen as well.
Yeah, I suppose as well. I mean, it's not just like he's buried in on a corner. He was buried opposite Franco, in center stage in the Valley of the Four. It's not like he's got some sort of small grave tucked away at the back. He's now the centerpiece of the Valley of the Fallen, isn't he? Since
Yeah,
Franco's been removed.
he's now the only person there with a named tombstone.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And are they going to do anything else to the Valley of the Fallen? Is there plans for a museum or?
I think that yeah, they're leaning towards constructing a museum. So again, it would be in the kind of image of Auschwitz or something like that, where in theory, it's better to preserve it as a monument to the horror rather than to destroy it.
Like, I mean, obviously the Civil War is quite a big thing with the historical memory, and it's also, well, democratic memory, but also there's the Francoist times as well. But one thing to come out of it that was quite a bit sh well was a bit strange was the confusion around the international brigades. So I think it was Pablo Iglesias tweeted that I think it would believe it was ancestors of people that were in the international brigades that fought on the side of the Republic during the Spanish Civil War would be allowed to apply for Spanish nationality. And then,
Yeah,
didn't
that's
they?
and then a government spokesperson, the government being sorry, distanced themselves from these remarks. Yes, it was a bit of a shock because it was announced on Twitter and it wasn't part of the leaked proposals. So I'd say I was a bit skeptical about it from the start, but I'm not sure. Maybe he was announcing it early and trying to force the government into a situation where it couldn't back down from that. But I know a few English commentators have said it's further proof of the kind of lack of communication between the two coalition partners.
I mean, they Podemos have like this theoretical base of agitation, part of their like political philosophical theory sort of stuff. Maybe it's part of that. I'm not sure. But as it stands, there's no passport for members of the international brigades or their ancestors.
I don't know what to tell you. There could be. So the bill will have to go before Parliament, before the Congress, and there will be a debate, and parties are going to have a chance to suggest amendments. So it could be that this is one of the amendments suggested for Podemos.
And the other thing that was quite interesting in the law was the day of well, there's 2 days, wasn't there, mentioned Day of Remembrance, which fits in with the 31st of October, and then the 8th of May, which is Victory in Europe Day. And that was, what did you say, was for members of it in exile? Is that right?
Yeah, it's for the Day of Remembrance of Spaniards in exile. So the 31st of October is All Saints Day in, you know, the Christian world. And in Spain, this is typically the day where family members go to the grave to lay flowers on the grave. And so this is becoming the day of remembrance and homage to victims of Francoism. Well, this is the proposal, I should say. And then the 8th of May, which is Victory in Europe Day, that's going to be the day of remembrance to victims of exile. So I think this is kind of falling in line with the paying homage to the Republicans who fought on the side of the Allies in the Second World War, who
right.
liberated Paris famously. Yeah. Well,
and a lot of refugees as well. I mean, there was a boat of Basque children ended up in Notting yeah. Hill in London, and
yeah, well, Southampton. That's my connection, the Basque to Southampton connection.
Right.
But also in North America and South America, France, they're scattered all over the place, really.
It's often a part that's forgotten about, isn't it? Of the democratic memory or the historical memory movement, I suppose. You know, these are people that were forced to leave their homes, otherwise they would have been murdered.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, there was obviously the people that were exiled and they're going to be commemorated on the 8th of May. But what about the people that, you know, that did die? I mean, a huge thing of historical memory activism, as you were telling us in the last interview with you about, you know, how much money it costs to do these exhumations and different things. Where does the law sort of stand on this?
So this is, as you say, exhumations and the mass graves are the primary image of historical memory over the last 20 years in Spain. That's how the movement came about, opening mass graves to recover the bones of victims of repression. And so this is primarily what the 2007 law tried to deal with. And the stipulation in this law is that the state, the central government, is going to take on a much larger role in exhumations because there are something like 114,000 people believed to be in mass graves, and they've recovered, I think it's 9,000 of them in 20 years. Uh-huh. And as we mentioned in the last podcast, the previous law was basically starved of funding by Mariano Rajoy and the Partido Popular. And so they're trying to increase the funding, but also to make it so that the law can't be so easily disregarded next time if the government changes, if it goes back to the Pepe or this has kind of been the centerpiece basically for it, because for a great number of years it was activists who had to open mass graves with their own money, memory associations, and now the state is providing more money, but it's also going to provide more assistance in principle. If, for example, there's a local mayor who resists maybe because of their political alignment, they're hoping that the state can supersede his jurisdiction and make sure that these graves get opened.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the problems with the structure of the Spanish electoral system and governance.
But also one of the proposals is to create a national DNA database. They had one in, well, they have one still in Catalonia and other parts of Spain, other autonomous communities. And the plan now is to create a national one. So if you know that one of your family members is in a mass grave, you can give your DNA sample and that will be used to corroborate DNA evidence from the bones that they find in mass graves. And to create a national database really is quite a big, would be quite a big jump forwards.
Definitely, yeah, especially into the modern day with hopefully, anyone that wants to, it won't be such a controversial issue to just go and give your DNA and find out. But this is, I mean, this is still going to be, I suppose it just shows you how bad and how divisive civil wars are. Like, there's still going to be arguments, isn't there, between families. About, if we dig up people or if we don't, or if we leave them if we don't, or
I suppose so, but I, as I keep saying, I really do think that this law is really rooted in victims' rights. It's about, in my opinion, it's about restoring just a bit of equality between those who were killed on the Franco side and those who were killed on the Republican side. And it is just, I think, bringing Spain, maybe kicking and screaming, into the 21st century and the age of human rights.
No, that's definitely a good point. And I think, as I said earlier, the film and obviously my interview with you in the last podcast are both good ways of people understanding, this really quite issue with a lot of dimensions to it. It's not fascists against Republicans or
Yeah,
kind of.
absolutely. I think that, again, I don't think it's divisive for that reason. I think it is just about, giving one side the same rights that the other side has always had.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, thanks very much, Tom.
Yeah, thanks.
That was Tom Wardle there. Thanks again, Tom, for coming on the show. If you want to follow Tom on his microblog on Twitter, which is curating different posts about the historical memory movement and its development, not only in the modern day, but also looking at anniversaries and recent developments in academia regarding the historical memory movement in Spain, then you can follow him on his Twitter handle, which is Spain Memory Wars. I would certainly encourage you to follow him as he always has a clear analysis and breakdown of the latest ongoings within this very large part of Spanish current affairs and history. This is an issue that's going to be going on for many months. Tom was telling me after we stopped recording that the last 2007 memory law actually took something like 13 to 18 months to pass. So this is going to be a long ongoing issue, and I hope to have Tom on again to discuss it. If you want a bit more background to the issue, you can listen to my first interview with him, which is on the podcast. And if you also want some history on the Spanish identity, I have my interview with Professor Sandy Olguín, who is the author of Flamenco Nation. Her interview is up, talking about the national Spanish identity and also the regional identity. And there's a third part of that interview to come in the near future. And just to plug one last interview, my interview with Alicia Hernandez Grande, who is a researcher into a Catalan researcher Her interview is also up, where she explains very well the history of the Catalan independence movement in recent years, and also how the Catalan National Day has holds its significance and the meanings around that for the Catalan people. Thanks very much for listening to Sobremesa. Next week, I will be bringing you some more news on coronavirus and how it's playing out here, specifically in Madrid, because it's one of the hotbed topics. 37 healthcare areas, so it's the area that our GP surgery covers, have been put or will be put into quarantine as of today, the 21st of September. And there has been a lot of controversy around the north and south divide, which has always been very evident in Madrid. So I'm hoping to have some people on to talk about that. Remember, you can like and share this podcast. It's available on Apple, Google, and Spotify, the Sobremesa podcast. There's a lot of Sobremesa podcasts out there, but if you type in Sobremesa podcast, then it should come up. And also, you can always tweet your opinions and share this podcast on the hashtag Sobremesa. Thanks very much. I hope you have a nice week. Stay safe if you are in an area that's got high rates of coronavirus. And I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.